From the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Welcome to tonight's show with your host, Rick Hale, and this is Chad Wilson. Karen can't be with us tonight. She's dealing with some health issues, but she'll be all right and be back with us next week. Tonight, we have a guest, Scott Tepperman. He's the newest member of GHI, as well as Michael Krabchuk, who will be with us in the second half of the show, and he is known as the Ghost Gadget Guy. He has a blog about gadgets, or more specifically, the paranormal iPhone applications, and you can see his blog at ghostgadgetguy.com. July issue of Paranormal Underground, which will be out soon, we have tonight's guest, Scott Tepperman, as well as Flying Monkey Paranormal Investigations, Stonehenge, and the Loch Ness Monster. So look for it probably for the next few days. Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained. Hello, hello. Is anybody out there? We're having some technical difficulties, and I apologize to you for that. We are trying to keep going because we have a great guest tonight. If you can hear me, just let me know in the chat room. Oh, great. You can hear us. Hopefully we'll get Chad and Rick back on the phone. This is Cheryl, by the way, from Paranormal Underground. And anyway, as I was saying, we're hoping to get this show going because we have a great guest tonight. We have Scott Tepperman from GHI. He is the newest GHI investigator. Chad, are you with us on the line? Please tell me you are.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. We're going to try and keep going. They can hear us in the chat room and on the radio, I believe.
Well, if we do get disconnected again, I mean...
Yeah, it may not be meant to be tonight. We've already lost Karen, who had... if you listened last week, she had a kidney stone problem, and she actually had to go to the hospital to get some attention. So we've lost her for the night, and we're going to miss her and hope she recovers quickly. And Rick, I'm going to try and give him another call. He's our host as well. And we lost him when our connection went down a bit earlier, but we will be hearing from Scott Tepperman, as I said, and I know, Chad, you have some questions for him.
Yes, I do. Do I need to go ahead and give a bio?
Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit about Scott? He's going to be previewed in our... Actually, he's not only going to be previewed, he's on the cover of our July issue, and I think you're going to like the article. It talks a lot about his paranormal investigations with his own group, Alpha. So why don't you go ahead, Chad, and talk about Scott a little bit before he... I think he's going to be calling in here in about a minute or two.
Well, Scott is a native of Queens, New York. He first became involved in the paranormal after visiting the original Amityville Horror House in Long Island. After moving to Tallahassee, Florida in 2004, Scott joined an amateur ghost hunting group. After 4 years with the group, he shifted his focus to more professional and structured investigations. Scott is co-creator of the popular Ghost Hunting 101 lecture series, which basically tours local bookstores, and is a month-long interactive seminar geared towards all ages interested in the basics of paranormal studies and investigations. In 2008, Scott co-founded, along with fellow paranormal investigator Ron Bordner, ALPHA, or the Association for Locating Paranormal and Haunted Activity. In 2010, Scott was cast as the newest investigator of Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters International. He will appear in the upcoming season of GHI, which premieres Wednesday, July 14th at 9, 8 Central.
All right, that's great. And I, as I was saying, we will be featuring Scott in our July issue. That will be online by the end of tonight. So if you come back in the morning and you look and you go to www.paranormalunderground.net, you're going to see Scott on the cover of our July issue. And you can actually read about Scott online for free by going to our forum, signing in, and going to our current magazine's forum, where you just open up the magazine and start reading. It's also going to be available pretty soon on MagCloud, which is a publish-on-demand site where you can type in the issues you want, put in your address, purchase them, and they'll be mailed directly to you. So I think we're going to go ahead and go to a break right now, play some music, and then when we come back, we'll hopefully have Scott on the line.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hey everyone, we're back and hopefully on the air, and we have with us Scott Tepperman from GHI. Hi Scott, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Good. I'm glad we got you on here finally. We are happy to have you, and I know Chad has a lot of questions for you, so I'm going to let him get started. But for everyone listening, this is Scott Tepperman, the newest investigator from the Sci-Fi Channel's hit TV show, Ghost Hunters International. So, Chad, would you like to start off asking Scott a few questions?
Oh, yeah, sure. How you doing, Scott?
How are you, Chad?
I'm good. Basically, you know, we've interviewed people from GHI before, and you know, we've got a pretty good rapport with them. I was just wondering, what's it like to be on the show?
It's great. It's very professional. It's very informative for me. I've learned a lot already. I've learned that I didn't realize that I was stronger in certain areas that I didn't give myself credit for, and I thought I was stronger in certain areas that I'm not actually as strong as I thought I was. But it's a learning experience. The guys are great. The chemistry with us is great. There's a lot of respect on this show between the production crew and the team, and it's a blast.
Well, how were you first approached to be on GHI? So I know you were in a group in Florida, Alpha, that you co-created.
Right. In 2008, I did. Basically, it was out of necessity. I was in a local amateur ghost hunting group for about 4 years, and the other co-founder, Ron Bordner, him and I both decided to form Alpha because there was no
hello
type of hello.
Oh, is this Rick?
Yeah,
this is Scott.
Okay, we were just going over who had approached him to be on GHI. Yeah, you can continue, Scott.
Oh, okay. Is Rick there?
Yeah, this is Rick.
Yeah, I'm here. Oh,
hey Rick, how you doing?
You guys, how are you? I can't believe you guys got me on my cell phone. I'm having problems getting on my Skype. Can't get back on it.
It's a crazy night.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do this.
Okay. Well, I was just asking Scott how he got involved with GHI.
No, like I said, we were in an amateur group, and as the other co-founder of Alpha, Ron Bordner, and myself, we were both in this previous group, and we decided that we needed to form a group like Alpha because we were getting approached by a lot of people asking legitimate questions, coming to us with general concerns and problems about their homes being haunted or having general paranormal-related issues, and there was no one around. I'm in Tallahassee, it's North Florida, and there was no one around that area to really, there was no outlet for that. So we decided to form Alpha, and it was very professional, and we always share the same goals, in my mind, as GHI, because every time I would watch that show, which, to be honest, was always one of my favorites out of all the ghost hunting shows, but I admired the way that they were very detail-oriented, they were very methodical, they were very meticulous with all their planning out, with all their details, and they didn't BS about anything. They were just direct, and they got the job done. And I was always thinking, I almost feel like we're GHI under the radar to a point, because we were existing the same way, just we didn't have any TV exposure, we didn't have any national exposure, but we had the same morals at our core. And we just felt that I would be a good fit for the show. And we tried to do anything we could to get on, to get anyone's interest. That when there were contests, we'd enter them. When there were meet and greets or meetups with some TAPS members or, like TAPSCon and everything, we made sure to attend for that. I don't know if that all had an effect on it, but I know we had a lot of persistence and perseverance. And I say we because Ron was instrumental in helping me get to this point as well. We were just driven to get one of us on the show, because we felt like it was a good fit, and we felt like it was a natural fit.
Okay.
Now, do you guys do, when you were with Alpha, did you primarily do private homes, or did you also do just investigate businesses?
We try to do whatever comes our way. I know a lot of people will get involved with TV or with some other, popular media, and either jump ship or bail from their groups, but I spearhead Alpha with Ron to this day. Everything that we do is together, and we do all the investigations together. I'm on every investigation, and I'm making decisions along with Ron on every investigation on whether or not to do one. And if you run your own groups, or if you know people that run their groups, everything costs a lot of money. So you don't charge people, and everything's out of pocket. So before we do an investigation, I honestly think to a point we might be too picky, because we turn down a lot of investigations. People seem crazy, or their stories seem weird, or things just don't add up, and we don't bother doing the cases. But I know also there's groups out there that will just focus on historical sites or just focus on residential sites. We'll do whatever, but it has to meet our pretty strict criteria before we go out and invest time and money.
Well, the group that I belong with, McHenry County Paranormal Research Group, here in Northern Illinois, just outside of Chicago, we do primarily private homes. And Tony Ozuski, our founder and fearless leader, he's a former police officer, so he has a lot of contacts with people.
Right.
And exactly. But I wanted to ask you though about the charging people fees, you know, to do that, to do investigations. What exactly do you think about that? Because there are groups out there that advertise and it's like, hey, you know, $100 for cleansing or $200 for an investigation. What exactly are your thoughts on that? And do you think that these are legitimate groups?
I don't know. I can't say since they charge, then they're not necessarily legitimate. I don't charge, and as a rule, we've never charged for an investigation. But the only reason being is that there have been so many groups and so many opportunists that come out, and they just try to turn a fast buck, and they try to charge for anything they can. And people, especially if you have your own group, you know, people approach you, and they feel, you know, they feel out of place and out of sorts, and they just want someone to actually give them a legitimate, you know, explanation for what's going on. And if someone is actually coming to you for help and you're able to help them, well, as long as you're not out of pocket with things, why would you charge somebody for that? You know, I mean, the only thing that we would do if we had to go 3, 4, 5 hours out of the way and we had to stay overnight, we would ask for some kind of accommodation. They could be very, very minimalistic. We're not all about crazy things, but we don't have money. We can't afford to go and, you know, flip the bill for a 3-night hotel stay somewhere just to investigate a place for free and then come back. We don't mind doing that for free, but like I said, we're just very, very financially limited. So anything that we do is either going to be local or it's going to have to be compensated to the point where, like I said, we're not out of pocket. Do I think that people at charge are not legitimate? I can't really say that. I'm sure there's some out there that are not. There's some that are. But what we try to do is recoup some of the costs that we've been putting into the group through, you know, if we do conventions, we try to sell. We have a DVD out. We try to sell that. We try to sell headshots. We try to do lectures. We try to do, you know, overnight investigates or ghost investigations or ghost hunts or workshops. And that's when we try to charge. I mean, no one is coming to us. There's no dire pressing need for someone to be approaching us. They're coming here because they want to. And then, you know, we'll provide them with an all-day event and we'll give them handouts or whatever may be the case. And then they pay for that. But, you know, that's the only thing that we try to make something on, which is understandable. I don't blame anyone for doing that. But no, just to profit off of help that people are asking for, I don't think that's the smartest thing in the world.
Well, I got a question from chat from Boxmouth Beaver. He wants to know if Scott gets paid now that he's on GHI.
By what? I'm sorry?
If Scott gets paid now that he's on GHI.
Do I get paid?
Yes, sir.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's my job, so they do pay you. I don't go ahead and now say, okay, now if Alpha does an investigation, we're going to charge for something. We don't do that. But we have salaries. I mean, we're employed by the network. So, yeah, they do pay us. Nothing exorbitant and crazy and, you know, out of this world. But they do pay us. I mean, that's our employer.
Okay.
Okay. So, hey, Chad, did you guys, in my absence, because of my technical difficulties, did you guys go over anything what, you know, brought Scott his interest in the paranormal?
We actually had just asked maybe two questions before you got back on.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because, you know, let me just ask you something about, you know, the whole Amityville thing, Scott. A lot of people seem to believe that the Amityville was a gigantic hoax. And I'm going to be honest with you. I believe that myself, you know, for the whole idea of making money, making a movie, a book, and whatever. What are your thoughts on, you know, would you say to somebody like myself who is, you know, highly skeptical concerning the Amityville horror?
When I tell people I got into the paranormal because Amityville case, I'm from New York, from Queens, and my parents split. I would go into the Long Island on the weekends to see my dad, and the Amityville horror case was great. And showing my age a little bit, but that was
I'm at the same age as you.
Oh, there we go. Okay. But I just got into it. I was very interested in it. I was interested in the crime aspects of the case. And when people started saying that there were ghosts there or that this and this was happening or people were possessed, I just got interested in it. I certainly haven't been a scholar on it over the years, which people have been led to believe. But in my opinion, I think that there were things going on that are unexplained. I think it was over-sensationalized once Hollywood got hold of it and the media, took the ball and ran with it, so to speak. But I do think stuff went on. I'm totally not completely sure of what went on. I know that whole DeFeo murder situation did go. I don't know to what extent someone was possessed or anything like this. In my opinion, I believe that the Lutzes who bought the home, which is when it got really, popular and all that, I think that they might have originally, and I could be wrong with this, and I feel bad because they've both since passed, so I'm trying to watch what I say, but I feel like they might have initially decided, hey, this could be a really good marketing ploy, let's buy this house, let's do this and that and whatever, but I think when they did do that, I think that, I can't say they were believers or non-believers, but I do believe that whatever happened in the house, I believe something happened when they were there. And I think that they were really like, oh, wow, there's something going on here. I don't think they were prepared to deal with it. I don't think they were prepared to handle it. And I think that they decided they were in over their heads and wanted to get out. To what extent everything unfolded, I don't know. I know there were a lot of, I can't think of his name offhand, but that one detective that made it like a witch hunt to pretty much track down everything that they said and did and backtrack. There's too many people that were in it for their own needs and their own agendas that they were pushing. So I think the whole story kind of got convoluted and twisted and turned to fit the appropriate angle for what the person was trying to push. So I think the true story is in there. I think there are supernatural aspects, but I think it's definitely buried underneath everything. And I'd really like to figure it out because I heard the other day Ron was telling me that there was like a six-hour Amityville marathon on History Channel or something. It was about the murders. It was about the case. And I missed it. And I'm trying to catch it because it was basically five or six specials, one-hour specials back-to-back-to-back. That they aired, and I just so happened to have missed them, and I'm kicking myself for that because I really, I salivate over that stuff. So I'll try to track them down, and anything will shed new light on it. But like I said, you got to take everything what's being brought up with that case with a grain of salt, and just believe what you believe. Read up on it, and I'm not going to go out and lecture and preach on it, but those are my opinions.
Yeah, we know what to say about opinions, right? We all got them.
Exactly.
Actually, my wife and I, we caught the interview that was done with Ronnie Butch DeFeo Jr., and I've, in my regular daily work, I work with children who have severe behavioral disorders, and my BS meter has gotten pretty good over the last 10 years of working with these kids, and, just watching DeFeo is... His movements and his manner of speech just told me that whatever he is telling us right now, full of crap.
Yeah.
I'm saying?
So, as you know too with paranormal, there's so many fields to in the paranormal field, so many like subcategories. And we've been approached before about people asking us about if we know about demonic possession or anything. I personally don't. However, what I do believe, like when people get exorcisms and they are possessed, I don't know that much to get into that stuff, but I believe that people can get possessed, but I believe that more often than not, people get possessed by themselves. Like they have a mental illness. They, you know, regardless if you think they're lying or whatever, if you bring an exorcism in or an exorcist in for an exorcism and you're throwing holy water on somebody, regardless if you just got it out of the tap on the way up the steps, if the person believes they're possessed, they're going to truly react in a fashion like that. And right. I believe that the people can get so wrapped up in that that they can, their faith can get distorted. They can you know, cause contusions. They can cause just weird movements in their body, weird positions, facial expressions, mannerisms could change. I do believe in that because I believe years ago, when people, you know, there were possessions all the time years ago because people didn't realize that there was something called schizophrenia. There was, you know, all that stuff out there. And I believe that a lot of that had been misdiagnosed as, oh, they're possessed. It's weird. It's possessed, whatever. And I think they've kind of changed that over the years, but I don't discount that. I believe that people could really be like that. So regardless of what, if DeFeo says he was possessed or he felt like overcome by whatever, he might really have believed that. He might really have been like that, and he might really be mentally ill. I mean, it could be any one of those factors. I've never met the man, you know, I've never sat down with him, but those are all possibilities, and as long as there's a possibility, I'm very interested in keeping the doors open.
Another question for chat. Wanda C wants to know if you've ever used a ghost hack box, Scott.
Is that like a Frank's box or a
Shack
or something?
Yeah, it's the one, I guess, that cycles to the radio stations.
Yeah, we have it. I don't know. I'm probably 50-50 on using those. We haven't used them a hell of a lot to really form an opinion on them. But we were on another radio show last night, and we actually had this question, and someone brought up the obelisk. And that's the one that, you know, spits out the words like, curl, fire, you know, they say like weird robotic stuff. But, you know, regardless of what the device is supposed to do, regardless if it's pre-programmed, regardless if it's just picking up radio waves and making it sound like other stuff, if you're asking, whatever the device you're using, if you're asking a question, if a device is just, let's say at a base level, it's not doing anything, okay, regardless if it's supposed to measure EMF or, you know, whatever, if it's at a solid constant, and it's not moving, and you ask a question, and you say, this device in front of me, make it sound or make it light up on command, and it does, that's proof enough for a lot of people. That's proof enough for me sometimes that, okay, something is working, regardless of what it is. You know, I've had a lot of heat for people because they say, well, this device really doesn't measure this accurately. That's fine, it doesn't measure it accurately, but like I said, if I'm putting it down and it's not doing anything, and then I feel like I'm having a session going and I ask whatever's in the room to make that thing move and it does, how do you explain that away?
Well, any skeptic can just rip something apart and rip it down, and you know, you're receiving or whatever, you know. So I think it all boils down to like what you said. If it's a constant and it's not moving and it's there, you're asking questions, you know, he said, that's proof enough for you, and that's usually proof enough for me.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, you could have a pot of water in front of you, just a pot of water laying on the floor, not moving. You know, if you're here, make the water ripple, and all of a sudden the water ripples. Is that scientific? No, but it responded to what you were saying. Something was manipulating something on command. So, you know, I'm always into people trying new devices and new techniques for investigation, and I think that's what I really jumped on with GHI is the fact that they experiment with stuff. They don't claim to know everything, but what they do know, they know a lot, and they know the science behind, okay, if something is you know, molecularly made this way and whatever, let's try this device because technically it should work for whatever. It's all trial and error, but it's amazing to watch, and it's pretty cool because it does make sense, and it's not just a crapshoot. It's not just a shot in the wind.
So what do you think about like trying to make correlations between, say, some kind of paranormal activity and environmental factors like temperature drops, stuff like that?
Well, like I said, there's so many, I think that and even speaking with even with some guys on some of the guys on GHI, mm-hmm. when I told them that, you know, I've been investigating 7 years and I maybe only have 5-6 pieces of real solid evidence, they even told me that I'm probably being too picky with certain okay. things. But I'm so, you know, in this field, you have nothing but your reputation. There's no, you know, hierarchy. There's no real caste system in place, so to speak, that you move up and move up. You just have your reputation. So mm-hmm. once that goes out the window, you're useless to the community. So we're very careful with putting what we have out there, but we try to analyze everything. I had, I think it was 2 or 3 days ago, mm-hmm. Someone, one of my Facebook fans, sent me an EVP and said that he caught this sound, you know, he doesn't know what it is, and he thinks it's an EVP. We ran it through several filtering programs. I had several members of Alpha check it out as well, and we heard something, and I told him, I said, you know, it sounded, and this is going to be rude because, you know, the similarities here, people are going to give me a hard time, but I thought it was either a dog barking or a woman. There was a woman either whispering or dog barking, but I also told him, I said, I can't attest to anything. I can't say definitively anything because yeah. I wasn't there. You know who was there. You know who wasn't there. You know who was talking. You know who wasn't talking. Not there to control any of the conditions. Yeah. Just like if we test anything, you know, if you guys have an audio recorder and you're walking around with an audio recorder, you could be as quiet as possible.
Hello?
But, you know, when you play it back, your feet are sounding like boom, boom, boom. You don't realize how strong things are.
I'm still on
so
my phone.
I try to really, really disconnect.
If you can pick up where you left off, Scott, that would be great. I was kind of handling the technical side, so I was kind of lost in what was going on there.
I don't remember what I was saying right now. I just ramble on and on and on.
Well, let me try and see if I can get Rick back, because I know he had been asking you some really good questions. So let me try and see if I can get him on here, and then we can continue on. In the meantime, have you talked a little bit about your personal side, what, you know, your likes, your dislikes? I know that you covered them in the article a little bit. If you wanted to talk a little bit about that.
I'm a Sagittarius. No, basically, I love horror movies. That's like my main thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also what really got me into the paranormal. I love horror movies. I love crappy movies. I love the bloody movies. Mm-hmm. And I just like the real cult, crappy movies. And that just really got me into, you know, I like the supernatural movies. I liked all the ghost aspects of movies, and then I guess that escalated, and then with the Amityville mm-hmm. horror stuff, it just really escalated, because I was into all those movies at a very, very young age, and it just really got me into the field.
Okay.
And, that's just personal stuff about me. My favorite show is Knight Rider.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible, but I get a lot of heat for that, but I love that show. But I'm an 80s guy.
Yeah.
I love karaoke, and I don't know what else to say.
Now,
it's
tell us.
Simple.
Mm-hmm. What about? I know you have some interesting music likes. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the Insane Clown Posse is definitely my favorite. I have a few pictures on my site of me in face paint.
Okay.
But we went to my girlfriend and I went to a concert last October, to an ICP concert, and she thought she broke her toe, and I'm like, how awesome is that going to be? Tell people you broke your toe in an ICP concert. But she didn't break it, but we had a blast at that time. But I just like people that are, you know, they're cool, they're not boring. I don't like boring music, I don't like boring people, I don't like boring things.
Can you tell us a little bit about your investigations on GHI, some of your favorites, some memories that have really stand out to you? I know that you can't give too much away because the season's going to be starting soon, but why don't you talk about some of your most fun adventures there across the seas?
We did one place in Slough, which is right outside London, and it was a Sweeney Todd case. It was a bar that apparently was the inspiration of Sweeney Todd, and I can't say that was the best case ever, but it mm-hmm. was probably my one that I'll really remember, because that was the first case that I was really on board with the team.
Okay.
And getting to work with them and really figuring out, you know, there's always a doubt. And when I started there, I was like, oh, I'm here now. I'm with the big boys. But I felt, you know, after that investigation, I'm like, oh, I do belong here. I felt like a perfect fit. I felt it was comfortable. Okay. I felt like that was where the ice was broken, so to speak. And it was a good case. The premiere starting Wednesday is, it's in Nottingham. We did the Galleries of Justice, which mm-hmm. is about five or six layers underground. And we had a lot of stuff going on there. It was a great case. It would be a really good episode, so please tell everyone to watch it. And then the very last case that I did with them for this run, because, you know, we just finished up right now. We're breaking for a couple months. But mm-hmm. we did it was a underground prison in Granada. And that was really intense. I believe that was one of the places that everyone came away with experiences.
Okay.
And it was definitely memorable.
What are some misconceptions about the show? You know, because there's always talk about things not exactly happening how they say they happen or show or depict they happen on the TV show. And I know you mentioned it in the article. What do you have to say to people who question what goes on behind the scenes?
I try to tell everyone this now because being a fan myself, I'm really, I'm proud to say this, but they don't, the bottom line is GHI doesn't fake anything.
Okay.
No, they might, I'm not saying, you know, that's probably why they don't catch an apparition every week or get possessed every week, because they don't fake anything. And some people might find that lacking, but I know most people out there who really appreciate the field and appreciate these shows will appreciate the fact that we do work. I mean, you know, it's fun and we do a great, you know, we have a great time doing stuff, but we're working and we're working hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the hours that we have are, you know, we work very, very long days. We're constantly, even when we're not investigating, we're working on evidence review, we're working on theories or concepts, or, well, you know, we tried that, so now when we try this, there's really no downtime. And I think it comes across on the show because we really are working. And from what I can tell you is I've been on board since February with them, mm-hmm. and no one has asked me, no one has asked anyone else, and I've never seen it done. Nobody fakes anything. The crew doesn't fake anything, and the thing that I like is they basically stay out of our way. They just say, do your investigation, and we're going to film you.
Okay.
And they're so non-obtrusive that it took me a little while to get used to it, because I would see, you know, so-and-so standing behind me. I'd walk 500 feet, and then I'd almost trip over the same person because they, like, somehow scurried around me, and they were running in front of me. So they hide very well. They stay out of your way. They try not to do anything that would get in the way of the investigation. They just let us do our thing. And I think that's really reassuring for a lot of people that are thinking, you know, oh, yeah, they think of it. Really mm-hmm. don't. And before I was even on GHI, the whole show, for me, that whole show was the one that always had the most credibility just for that reason. It was very mm-hmm. obvious to me that these guys were scientific and they're really into what they were doing.
Okay.
So this is Chad again. Who's on the show? Who will be on the show with you starting next week?
I can't really say that because they keep you know, have people on and people not on. But I will tell you that the premiere starts off with me getting introduced.
Okay.
Susan and Carl from GHA, they're on board as well.
Okay.
And it's a great case. You'll see who's on and. You know, the one thing they do is they try to keep the teams fresh, and they try to keep the chemistry fresh, and they will. There's only so many people you can take into a place because of the... Still, you don't realize how much you really can contaminate a location. So even if you're in a prison, you don't need 50 people in there. You can get five or six people, maybe less than that, to cover it very, 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 very well. So they keep that in mind when they, you know, so to speak, activate us. And, yeah, I mean, that's what I can tell you with that.
I've always enjoyed like Barry on the show and his I guess innovation with some of the stuff that he's come up with.
It's cool to watch him and Paul together.
Yeah,
they're they know their stuff. They really know what they're doing, and you know, for being the tech guys and everything, Rob actually knows quite a bit too.
Yeah.
They can might as well call him the tech manager because he's, you know, spearheading a lot of the stuff that we do.
They've been to a lot of different places. Is there any, can you tell us any of the locations you guys will be going to this next season?
The ones that we just filmed?
Yes.
I can tell you that we were in Nicaragua.
Okay.
And I can tell you we were in UK, and, you know, we went to Slough and Nottingham mm-hmm. and Wales.
Okay.
I don't know if I can really say what else, but that's a good chunk.
Okay, speaking of equipment, if you had to choose one piece of equipment that you could take with you on an investigation, what would it be?
You might not consider this piece of equipment, but I'd say just a very good investigator.
Okay.
That's more important to me than anything else. If you have someone there, I would say that the equipment is only as good as the investigator. I
mean, okay.
You have all spent thousands of dollars on devices, and if people don't know what they're doing and they're fumbling around in the dark, it's just very, very damaging to your case.
Okay.
So if you have a good investigator that you can depend on and, you know, in anything, most of the places you go to are either unsafe or you feel they're, like, physically unsafe or, you know,
mm-hmm.
they could be emotionally unsafe or, you know, the people that it could be there or the actual structural, it might not necessarily be structurally sound.
Okay.
You know, the thing that I'm impressed with, too, is GHI, after 1 month, I feel like they're my family away from home.
Well,
because they're very, very close. And to this day, I mean, you know, even when we're not filming, we're constantly keeping tabs on each other, and we really, you know, care about each other's well-being. So
okay.
It's good to know you can depend on those people when you
yeah.
need to.
Now, what is your stance on, like, the more antiquated means to communicate with the dead, as like Ouija boards, pendulums, dowsing rods, stuff like that?
I'm not as crazy as, you know, a lot of people are so fanatic, like, oh, if you see Ouija boards, burn them. I don't
yeah.
know about that.
Yeah.
I personally believe, unless maybe you're talking about, you know, 100-year-old Ouija boards,
mm-hmm.
they're pieces of plastic or wood. I mean, they're Parker
yeah.
Brothers, they're whatever. You know, I think that they could, if you're using one properly and you really get into it, they can get you into a place that's emotionally vulnerable, that can
okay.
open you up to something. Because if a spirit or something evil is trying to get across, it takes less energy to go to somebody that already has their defenses down.
Okay.
And it will target you for that reason. So I think that's dangerous. I personally, my opinion is that Ouija boards is a waste of time. We do have someone in Alpha
yeah.
that has been studying mediumship with someone overseas. I don't remember I think she said it was two or three people overseas that are some of the top mediums around. I don't remember their names right now, but
okay.
she's, and I used to, you know, roll my eyes, okay, yeah, do your thing, whatever, but because she was in our former group as well, so I've known her about 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
But she has done certain things and has said certain things and conducted herself in certain ways that is kind of, I can't say making me a believer, but she said things that she wouldn't know, that there's no way she would possibly know. And
okay.
she impressed me a little bit. I can't say she was dead on with everything, but she'd pull out things out of the air, and I'm like, well, that's pretty good. How'd you know that? And it's not body mechanics. It's not looking at the way someone's sitting. If you're sitting with your arms crossed, someone's saying, I can still tell you you're closed-minded. Oh, really? Well, that's what my body language is telling me.
Yeah.
It was nothing like that, though. She was just very, very good with that. But that being said, she's used on several investigations scrying with the
mm-hmm.
with the pendulum and all that.
Okay.
And it's a little more positive. It's not, you know, the Ouija board, supposedly they open the portal to all the lowlifes, like the bums and the rapists and, you know, all, you know what I mean? Like all,
yeah.
all the people that you think they all hang around the entrance and they'll get through and you don't know what you're opening it to. Scrying is a little different to me. And I've tried that myself and it seemed to have impressed me because when you're going around the board, if you
mm-hmm.
hit a certain letter and it's spelling something out, it does get taught. It basically pulls when you get to that letter.
Okay.
There's no way to explain it. So I was kind of impressed with that. Would I use that on every investigation? No, but I wouldn't dissuade people from trying to use it.
Well, to me, I just think they're like a focal point, maybe a point of contact between whoever's using it and the spirit world. So.
Yeah, I mean, and people have their own theories on it, but like I said,
uh-huh.
when I'm sitting there with my hands on that, what is that thing called? That
the planchette?
The planchette, I can't think of what it is. To me, I'm just like, okay, I'll go along with you. Just pull it wherever you want. You know, I can't get into that. I don't believe in those. And I think if you do a workshop or, you know, a quote-unquote ghost hunt with 100 people that show up to do one with you guys, you know, for a special event, mm-hmm. then it makes a good time. It's interesting. It's a good conversation piece.
Yeah.
But I have never really experienced anything good or bad with them, really. I don't believe in those.
Okay. So has GHI ever investigated a place that maybe they didn't feature on the show? They just maybe shot it and then they didn't film it or didn't show it?
I believe they, from what I was told, this was before I was on board, but
okay.
I think they shot one entire case that just never was used.
Okay.
I don't know for what reasons, but I just think they didn't need it, or one turned out being a better case than they thought it was going to be, so it ended up being a full hour, and maybe the other one got just shuffled around. I don't know. But I think, at least I know of one, definitely, that was not used.
Okay. And what do you consider the best type of evidence that can be collected?
I just think any... I mean, I like EVPs a lot. I know people
okay.
go into their... You know, I like photos. I like whatever. I like EVPs. But I think the best piece of evidence that you can collect, regardless of what it is physically, if you know unquestionably that there was no human contamination, there was no operator error with the device you were using, there was nothing that it could possibly be... Other
okay.
than all the, you know, the typical man-made anomalies, then that's impressive to me. You know, I always tell people when you're starting out, try to, if you're trying an EVP session, try to do things wrong. You know, walk outside recording when it's raining. Walk outside when mm-hmm. it's windy, record. Walk around and record and hear all these things and almost make a false positive folder, if you will, so
okay.
you know what you can go back to. Same
okay.
with photos. Go outside. Take photos in the rain, put your finger over the lens, do whatever you need to do, you know, overexpose you keep the shutter open too long and take the pictures, you know,
yeah.
do anything you can, but keep a journal of them. So when you get something and you weren't aware of doing that, you have something as a point of reference to go back to.
Well, I guess I don't know if you call it paranormal investigation, but I tend to ghost hunt, and I usually learn as I go, and I guess the more you do it, the more you learn.
Everyone does. I mean, everybody does that.
I had a question, Chad. I hate to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
and I don't think that you talked about this yet, Scott, but if you have, correct me. Can you talk a little bit about your Ghost Hunting 101 lecture series? I know you did it in the past, and I'm not quite sure if you're doing it now, but I thought that sounded really interesting.
I'm actually planning, I'm going to see if it comes through, but I'm planning a Halloween event. I can't really say where yet, just in case it doesn't go through, but... What we're planning on doing is doing a dual investigation of two very known haunted locations that have given us a run for our money in the past. And we also want to incorporate that with a day-long seminar series. We basically want to do the basics of ghost hunting, which is, you know, what to use, what are ghosts, what do people think they are, what's the equipment you should use, what's the etiquette that you should be using, what's the protocol, the typical stuff, explaining some of the more basic terminology and everything else in play in the field so people know.
Okay.
And then we would do an EVP, like about an hour of an EVP, which we will touch on ENP, which is electronic noise phenomenon, and ITC, which is instrumental transcommunication, all the sub-genres, if you will, of EVP. And then we'll do a photo one, which shows all the false positives, shows you how to minimize those, and tells you what to look for with examples of real ones. So, yeah, we still do that. The reason, again, why we did that is people had a lot of questions. And, you know, myself, like a lot of the other people, a lot of the shows, you know, not saying Ghost Hunters or whatever, but there's shows out there that are just ridiculously over the top and crazy. And they the entertainment factor is undeniable. Like, yeah, they're great, they're fun to watch. But they do steer people in the wrong direction. People really believe a lot of this stuff. Or they thought they did, and then this comes out, and they're like, okay, well, these are two polar opposites. I'm believing one way, and this is completely opposite. Mm-hmm. Let me know what's what. But we just want to kind of put people on the right path. And we don't ever claim to know everything, but we say, you know, in our experience, we've learned this and this and this, and the reason we believe this is whatever. We'll cite examples or cite, you know, evidence or whatever to back that up. And we just try to explain that to people. We try to keep it for all ages, try to keep it interactive and entertaining, And I think it's important to have those. It's important for us because it keeps us sharp, because we have a PowerPoint presentation that we pretty much try to update 2 or 3 times a year. We're not sitting on the same one. We update the graphics on it. We update the content. We're constantly looking on the internet. We're constantly looking at people write like theses on stuff, or they have their own studies or theories going on. We try to incorporate that all into our presentation, so we're always on the up and up, or at least bring up stuff. Well, this exists. We don't know about it, but you should know about this because whatever. So we try to keep it very fresh, and yeah, it's definitely important.
And for those interested, where can they find out how to find one of your lecture series?
You can always check just alphaghostteam.com, and it has all our events listed. And then I have a Facebook and a Twitter of my own, and I'm always pushing everything on there either for my GHI stuff, GHI show, or Alpha stuff. It's all on there as well. Just search GHI Scott or Scott GHI. I don't know how it is, but it'll come up.
Has been investigating with GHI all that you thought it would be?
Yeah, it has been. And that's what I was very happy to say, that it didn't leave me with any bitter taste in my mouth. Okay. I wasn't worried. I was worried earlier on, I'm like, oh, I hope that, you romanticize things in your mind, and then when they happen, you're like, really? This is it. I thought I was worried that I would be doing that with this, but it's not that at all. I mean, it's tough on everybody. It's hard. We have a great time. We're definitely ready to go home when the trip is over. Mm-hmm. And it's hard on your families and everything, but you're there to do a job, and you do a good job, and you feel comfortable about it. And you do a solid, professional job, and you can sleep well at night because we did an honest, an honest day's work. We really did. And, yeah, I mean, it's everything I hoped it would be.
That's great. Now, will you be on future seasons of the show, or is that something that you don't know quite yet?
I think I'm still on board with them because contract-wise, but,
okay.
Who knows what and who knows what goes on. I should be. I know that we just finished up this is like the end of the last part of this is the second part of the first part of the season that just aired in, what was it, January? So I'm finishing up the season right now.
Okay.
And now we're on break right now until we film more. I should be on board.
Now, can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the most significant evidence you captured working with GHI investigators or also with Alpha, your own paranormal group?
I had actually two things, and they were both more experiences than actual evidence.
Okay.
But it was 2006. I was with my former group. We were investigating the old jail in St. Augustine. We were there overnight. And I'm not going to draw parallels between this and everything. I do believe it was coincidence. But the team was using a Ouija board.
Okay.
And I was filming them. And they were sitting on, if you've ever been there, I don't know, but general population, it's got a bench that's, two benches are connected to a table. It's like a picnic bench.
Mm-hmm.
They were sitting using the Ouija board, getting pretty antagonistic. And they were saying stuff like, okay, let's see, if you're here, let us know. Why are you toying with us? Let us know you're here. Just give us a sign. When that happened, I was pulled on my arm and thrown off a bench.
Wow.
And and that freaked me out. I've never had anything else like that happen up until, I think it was March with GHI. We were in a castle, and I was investigating with Barry. And something happened. I can't really say what, because apparently it's going to make the show.
Okay.
But I thought Barry was joking around, and I turned around, and he was nowhere near me.
Wow.
And that just really, I got goosebumps, and it freaked me out. So I'm like, oh, my God, something just really, really, something happened. But I totally thought it was Barry joking around.
Now, as far as EVPs, can you talk about a few of maybe the most impressive EVPs you've caught during your investigations?
There's a couple with GHI. I can't really mention those specifically. I don't know
okay.
if I can. I'm just not going to. When I was with Alpha, though, we were investigating the Windsor Hotel in Georgia, and stuff was known to be going on in that hotel. It's very active. And we were in the dining room where, just off the dining room, the kitchen, there was known to be plates upending themselves and things flying across the rooms and everything else like that. So, excuse me, what we did was sat down, tried to do an EVP session, and it was Ron and myself. It was the marketing director of the hotel and a guest or something. It was just the four of us, and we were asking questions. We got specific, clear responses, and they were very clear. It was like, you know, it's like if someone's in here, let us know, give us a sign that you're here, or, you know, the typical questions. And we heard, hey, and it was really, it was very clear. It was like, it was almost like right into the recorder.
Oh, spooky.
And we heard that someone injured me, which was kind of mumbled, but when we cleaned up, you heard it, and it was a help also.
Wow.
And that was all in the same session, and it was in a place that was known to be very active. And that kind of got us all fired up, because we investigated that place before, and we've known the stories as well. Mm-hmm. And we've always had little things going on there, but this was the apex of everything coming together.
Wow, some of those things sound really creepy yet intense. And does it make you want to go back to certain locations when you have something so startling, like being knocked off a bench or getting an EVP like that?
You know what? It wouldn't fire me up more so than not getting anything. I think just what I feel is I like to go into a location and just get a feel for the place, the energy of the place. I believe I'm a better investigator now than I was when I started, because I feel like I'm more in tune to what's going on.
Okay.
I'd walk into a place right away, oh, there's nothing here, and I'd leave. Now I, you know, give a chance to get a feel for the place, to settle and to see what's going on. And I can start feeling, okay, for some reason, I want to go into this room. Like I was doing that with GHI, there was nothing specifically in certain rooms, but I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling that I want to go into that room for some reason. That kind of that kind of reasoning behind my actions. And, you know, it's if you feel energy, sometimes you can really feel energy in the air.
Okay.
And that's just, to me, what fuels me to want to go back to a place. If we get stuff, that's great. If we get stuff and we have more questions than answers, we might want to go back and try to fill in the gaps of what's been going on.
Right.
But, no, it's usually the energy of the place and how I'm feeling personally really dictates whether I want to rush to go back or not.
So you talked a little bit about feeling energy and that sort of thing, feeling the atmosphere of a location. Are you at all psychic?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I was told that everyone is a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, 10 years from now, I might be the next Sylvia Brown. Like, hey, call me over on Montel. You know, you don't know, but...
Right.
I don't think I am at all. I think, to be honest, I'm too have that part of my mind too closed to be open and receptive to that stuff. So it's possible, but I don't think so. However, even with GHI and with Alpha, especially with GHI, though, this past trip, I've been feeling a lot of things, and I don't usually feel stuff. So I was even talking about that. I'm like, what, am I psychic now? But I was definitely feeling things, and I know I don't ever say that because, yeah, okay, you felt something, that's great, so did I, you know. But I really was, and I never feel things. So when I do, to me, it's significant because I know I don't do that all the time.
Right, okay.
So I might start paying attention to that a little bit more, but I don't really think I'm psychic.
Okay. Now, Heidi in the chat room has a question for you. She wants to know if there's been any countries that GHI has not been allowed in. The team has asked to go there to investigate a case, and then you were rejected, basically.
As far as I know, usually the people come to us about stuff.
Okay.
I know that GHI can, the members of GHI and even the crew can express interest in wanting to pursue a location, but usually the cases come to us from clients or from interested parties. I know for a fact, though, that Japan is not very forthcoming with anything, just because they believe that their families will be cursed, and, you know, they really believe in that stuff. So I don't think that they would be necessarily forthcoming with information, but, as far as I know, I think that might be the only country that I know would have a problem.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, that last question was from Ryan, not Heidi, but Heidi does have a question, and she wants to know, do you believe if ghosts can speak and understand any language?
What I'm with the theory of whatever you are in life when you pass away, mm-hmm. your soul or your essence is the same way. If you were native, you know, it took me a long time to realize that not every ghost that I was talking to was a native Queens, New Yorker, born in the 70s. Took me a long, I just grasped that concept. But you have to realize, you know, people can be from 12th century, they can be from England, they can be from wherever, they could be talking slang, things could be, you know, reverse speech, you never know what's going to be going on there. So, yeah, you have to take into account anything that you might be captioning or might be trying to communicate with. Now, regardless of that, a lot of the people, I don't know, people, the spirits, I don't know if they necessarily understand English, but if they're trying to communicate with somebody and they hear someone speaking something, regardless of what language it is, I would be willing to bet that they're going to continue to communicate. So that's, okay. to me, just as good as, you know, basically saying, hi, I'm here, talk to me, even if they don't understand you, if they sent you as you would if you were an investigator and with enough experience start sensing something in a room, I think that would work out fine.
Okay.
One thing that's kind of interesting to know is, you know, a lot of people bring up this question of, oh, if you guys are going overseas, you should be speaking in the language that they're speaking. Not
right.
everyone's going to understand English, and they get fired up about that.
Right.
Rob brought this up, too, so I can bring it up. But basically, we do speak in the languages that are native to that region. But for TV purposes, who's going to be watching if we're talking Spanish or German for a half hour? So
okay.
what we usually would do is we'd say, you know, what is your name? And then, ¿cómo te llamas? And then they would use the what is your name part. But then everyone else would say, oh, well, they're not going to understand. We've been saying both. So what we started doing fairly recently is just using the native language. So you'll probably see a lot more of that because we're not giving the option to use the English part.
Okay.
Okay. If that makes sense at all.
Yeah, it does. It does. Okay, we have a question from Ghost Hunter 50 in the chat room. This is an interesting one. He wants to know if you have ever experienced the spirit of an animal.
I have not, no.
Okay.
I do believe they exist, but I have not.
Okay, so that's interesting. Before I send you back to Chad for... he has another question for you before we go to break, but what advice do you have for amateur ghost investigators, paranormal investigators, on how they can effectively research and investigate a site?
One thing I would say is basically don't go online and look at 99% of the groups out there and do the opposite. Don't fall into the
okay.
traps people do. People try to get over-sensationalized. They try to rush to, oh, this and this, this is this and this and that. Believe me, if you're true to yourself and you really understand what you're doing and you're careful about putting up pages and pages of pages of quote-unquote evidence, which is orbs all the time, people are going to start looking at you better if you don't do that.
Okay.
If you put two or three or four things and you reason why you're putting those up and you also discount why you're discounting other stuff, people start respecting that. So just be very responsible and thorough and honest when you're investigating, and that will carry you a very long way.
Responsible, thorough, and honest. I think those are great pieces of advice. Chad, I know you had a question.
People do get caught up in that stuff.
Yeah. That's so true. Chad, I know you have a question for Scott before we go to commercials. So did you want to ask him?
Yes. What is a juggalo?
that's a diehard insane clown posse fan.
Oh. I've actually...
think they're gang or they're crazy, but no, they're...
I've actually heard of it before. I just never really knew anybody who was a juggalo.
Yeah, they're good... close people, and
okay.
they look freaky and weird, but you go to one of the concerts and it's like your long lost family reunion. It really is a great great bunch of people.
Okay.
That's
well,
great.
Thank you.
Is there anything you'd like to tell our listeners before we go to commercial break? And when we come back, we're going to be talking to the Ghost Gadget Guy, also known as Michael Kravchuk. But before then, I just wanted to see if you wanted to let our listeners know anything about the upcoming season of GHI or even anything that you're working on right now. I don't know if you're... I think I read you might be working on a book. Anything like that?
No, I want to write one, and I always been kicking around some ideas for years.
Okay.
But that's like the 54 Chevy in someone's garage that's going to be worked on one day. You know, who knows what's going on with that. But no, what I'd say is I'm not just saying because I'm in it, but I think we really upped the entertainment value for this season of Ghost Hunters International. I think the chemistry is really good. I think we all lightened up a little bit. I think with the, not just tooting my horn, but the three new investigators on board, we really breathed a little bit of fresh air into the show. And I think we work very well together, and we have some really good cases coming up.
That's great. I can't wait to watch the new season. And again, that's on July 14th. Is that correct?
Wednesday night, 9 o'clock.
Okay, great. All right, terrific. And did you want to give out any websites?
Just alphaghostteam.com is the alpha site. There's also an alpha Twitter, which you can get through that site. And then just search for me, Scott Tepperman, or some output, GHI Scott or Scott GHI. I have a Facebook and Twitter, and I respond to everybody, any kind of comments, and I always post videos and weird things, and it's a really fun site. So I just want to definitely touch base with everyone and stay in touch with everybody.
Okay, great. Well, everybody make sure to check out Scott's sites and watch GHI coming up on the 14th. And I really wanted to thank you, Scott, for bearing with our technical difficulties. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll get
Paranormal Underground magazine is out, by the way. Isn't it out pretty much?
It's going. It is. It's going online tonight. And if everybody wants to check back in the morning, either later tonight or check back in the morning, you can read a Q&A with Scott and find out more about him and his time on GHI. So I hope everybody comes back and checks that out. That's on paranormalunderground.net. So thank you so much, Scott. We really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll be back right after this break.
This is Karen Frazier, founder of the Namaste Project. Several months ago, I was really struggling with a number of people in my life. I got tired of being angry all of the time. One day I was driving home thinking about how I could stop being angry when the words, the Namaste Project, popped into my head. In that moment, I understood that every person, even the ones who made me angry, had a light of the divine in them, and if I could just find that light in every person I encountered, then my world would be a better place. The Namaste Project was born. Now I'm inviting you to join me. Visit namasteproject.org to learn how you can change your world. Change happens one person at a time. I hope you'll join me. That's namasteproject.org. Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Hey everyone, we're back. And we have with us Michael Kravchuk, and he's also known as the Ghost Gadget Guy. He has a blog. Welcome, Michael, to Paranormal Underground Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Technical difficulties, but I was actually able to listen over my iPhone here. So,
oh, wonderful.
Very good.
Wonderful. And speaking of iPhone, you are joining us today to talk about some, what are they called? Paranormal iPhone applications. Is that correct?
Paranormal iPhone applications. That's right.
So that
I figured just jump in.
Sounds very interesting, and I can't wait to hear about it. I'm not very technically inclined, I'll have to admit, but you know, why don't you just start off by talking about maybe the most, I know there's some controversial iPhone apps out there, but maybe some of the most useful, and then talk about, sure, you know, what else is out there.
Sure, not a problem. Well, as people may or may not know, I mean, the iPhone, not only is it a phone, but it's a pretty decent mini computer. And there's a lot of really good apps that people have developed that are out there that, surprisingly, even though they weren't developed specifically for paranormal research and ghost hunting, are pretty darn useful. Before I get hate mail, you know, people saying you can't use a phone, it's going to trigger your EMF detectors and everything. Mm-hmm. The iPhone does have the ability to turn itself off in an airplane mode, so it'll only kind of be in its computer mode, if you will. So it's not going to be triggering off your K2 or anything like that.
Interesting.
But the iPhone's got a three-axis accelerometer, which is it's pretty sensitive. It detects movement on all three axes, on an X, Y, Z axis. So if the phone vibrates in any way, shape, or form, it pretty much is able to detect that. So that's pretty handy, and I'll talk about some apps useful with that. And it's also got a three-axis magnetometer, which is almost like an EMF detector, and it actually detects an EM field around the phone. So,
okay.
And these apps kind of use these different gadgets for the phone there. The first one is iSeismo, and that's a free application, and that actually uses the three-axis accelerometer, and it works just like a seismograph.
Okay.
And for those of you out there that use like a geophone, what's neat about this is it's you're actually seeing all three axes, the X, Y, and Z axis, and it's pretty darn sensitive. And just like sitting there watching a seismograph, if there's any kind of movement, if there's a truck rumbling by, if there's somebody walking, it'll actually detect that. So just like a geophone. And what's really neat about this one, data log it, and you could send that information to yourself via email, but you can also set an alarm.
Okay.
So that this way, once it stabilizes and it says, okay, I know what this is, how much vibration I'm getting right now in the environment. So that's iSeismo. So again, that's a pretty cool one. It's just like a geophone right there for your phone, and you can sit there and watch it, or you could walk out of the room and set the alarm, and if something triggers it, you know, pretty loud alarm that you'll hear all the way down the hall. Another really neat app that's out there is Sound Level. And I like using this one during EVP sessions, and this is another free app. And what it uses is the iPhone's stereo mics. And it has an oscilloscope mode and a peak decibel meter. So you can sit there and you can watch the sound live. And what's really neat about this with the oscilloscope display is as you're asking the EVP session, your questions, after you you give it your silent response there, if you're picking up something, you can actually see on this graph, mm-hmm, not only if you're hearing a sound, but it's actually showing in the frequency. So just like an oscilloscope, if it's in the lower frequencies, it's going to spike towards the left. If it's in the higher frequencies, it's going to spike towards the right. So it's a pretty neat little app there. Another one that I like is SpyCam. This is another free one that's on there, and it actually uses the iPhone 3-megapixel camera. And what it does is once you start it, it actually somehow senses the image in front of it. And if that image changes at all, it'll actually start snapping pictures until that movement stops. So you can set this up on a tripod, leave the room and set this up, and if something triggers it via movement or anything, it's going to start snapping pictures there and put them in your photo library. And along with that, with the camera apps, Another one that's out there is from Digital Dowsing, Bill Chappell, who's the maker of the controversial Ovilus, who also has the iOvilus for the iPhone, by the way, is Magic Cam. This is a $1.99 app, but for $2, it's a pretty cool application. And what this one uses, it uses the 3-axis magnetometer for the phone, and it will measure the EM field around the phone. And essentially, when that field either increases or decreases, just like the spy cam, where that detects movement, this is actually going to detect the EM field change. And if it detects something, it's going to start snapping pictures. So the same way that you know, we may use our K2s or our tri-field meters to detect the EM fields, this is going to start snapping pictures for you, too. And you can adjust the levels on that as far as the sensitivity goes.
Oh, very cool.
So, you know, some neat apps that are out there. There's all sorts of them that are out there. Probably one of the most controversial is the Ghost Radar app. Anybody who has an iPhone and is into ghost hunting has probably seen this. And I've heard pros and cons on it. It also uses the 3-axis magnetometer. And just like the Ovilus, it'll spit out words. It'll tell you in proximity ghosts around you. But from what I heard, I guess the words itself actually kind of cycle over time. So can't really say pro or con on that one.
Okay.
But if people got an iPhone, they probably are aware of the Ghost Radar app that's out there.
Of the ones you've talked about so far, have you been able to use them in the field as of yet?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, I've used the spy cam. And, you know, what's interesting is it's triggered itself. I haven't caught anything as far as the pictures go. Obviously, you can't use it in a dark situation with a 3-megapixel camera. So,
oh, okay.
But it's triggered before without really having any kind of movement. And there's times in which it sat there all night without snapping any pictures. The sound level I've used, and what's really interesting is at the same time that I've picked up stuff and been able to see it, like a low-frequency rumble when I've been reviewing my EVPs on Audacity later, I've also was able to see it on the sound level. So even though I wasn't hearing it with my ears, I was actually seeing it on the oscilloscope of the iPhone app, and it was also being picked up by the microphone by my H2. So,
well, that's really interesting.
Yeah, good stuff. And like I said, you know, the geophones out there are hard to come by. The parts are hard to come by, and for, you know, for the free Seismo app, you got to like that. You got to like free.
Definitely.
But I think we've got a lot more to come. I think we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg on the apps that are going to be out there for things like the iPhone and the Droid and everything. I mean, instead of us having to walk around with a laptop, you know, these handheld cell phone mini computers are really going to help us in the paranormal research.
If you could just pick one, what would be the most impressive paranormal app that you've utilized to date?
I'm sorry?
If you could just select maybe one, the top one that you've been most impressed with to date, what would that be?
Probably the first one I picked up there, which was the iSeismo.
Okay.
I just like the fact of it's really neat to be able to see to detect that low frequency rumble or taps or if someone's walking, and you know it's actually sensitive enough that when I've had it sitting on the floor, when we've had folks, investigators walking in the next room, I've been able to see it.
Okay.
So it's kind of been able to help us, you know, debunk some things.
So speaking of debunking, how can you be sure that what the application is picking up is paranormal and not normal? I mean, obviously, sometimes you can rule out someone walking by in the next room or talking in the next room, but how can you, when you think you may have captured something that's paranormal, how can you really know?
I would say pretty much when you start ruling out everything else, when you didn't hear a sound, you didn't hear a sound captured on your voice recorders, you didn't hear it, you didn't hear it in your ears, and you're seeing it on the application itself, you know, pretty much the same way like somebody using a tri-field out there.
Okay.
Like our guest was saying tonight, you know, if you ask a question and it's giving a response and it does that over and over, I'd have to say that's paranormal.
You talked about it a little bit earlier, but the controversy or skepticism surrounding these devices, them interacting with other computers and phones and this and that, how can you kind of quell those concerns?
Well, you know, let's talk about the fact, if everybody's, you know, familiar with the controversial obelisk, it seems like everybody has an opinion one way, shape, or form on that. And, you know, Bill Chappell put this out here, and there's actually the iObelisk that's out there that's got the 1,000-word built into it and pretty much acts like the regular obelisk. But, again, you know, we own an obelisk in our group. We own multiple obelisks. I've got the Obelisk FX, and, you know, when you ask a question and you have not just one word or two words, but you have six straight words in context of what's being asked, it kind of rules out coincidence.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And can we explain it? Can we definitely say that, yeah, this is definitely paranormal, and I'm talking with somebody from the other side. I still can't say that to date.
Okay.
You know, I can't explain some of the EVPs we have, and, you know, maybe it's our own psychic energy that's impressing on this equipment and causing these responses. I can't really say. But, I guess we still have to tie that into the paranormal because, you know, we are manipulating it in one way, shape, or form, either us or, you know, some entity.
Can you talk a little bit about some of those EVPs that were captured? What did they say? How did you capture them? That kind of thing?
With the apps or just in general?
Well, you had mentioned, I think, capturing some EVPs on the apps. Or did I misunderstand?
Like I said, I didn't catch necessarily EVPs. I was able to use the sound level meter during one of the investigations, and we were actually near a busy road. So at the same time that a truck would go by, and I really couldn't hear it with my ears in the room that I was with, but the sound level was actually picking it up from the low-frequency rumble, and you can actually see it on the seismograph. And my H2 later, you know how sensitive those are, I was able to pick that up. I was able to see it, you know, pretty boldly on when I was reviewing the evidence and looking at it on in Audacity.
So when investigators are looking to get an app, what should they do? What criteria should they look for when they're selecting one, two, maybe more?
I would say this. The ones that are out there that are not necessarily made for ghost hunting, does the app do what it says it's going to do? You know, pretty much the ghost radar one says that it's going to detect ghosts. I could probably throw that one out the window.
Okay.
But ones like the seismometer, I mean, this one is built pretty well. And, you know, there's probably, you know, several $1,000 seismographs that probably are as sensitive as this one, you know, for free. I would say look out there, look on the boards that are out there, and for the ones that are free, you know, heck, download it, try it out. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, you know, you can always delete it. We do have a couple apps that are out there, Digital Dowsing, you know, Bill Chappell, he's made a bunch of them now. He actually has, I think, 7 applications that are out there.
Okay.
Some of them are, you know, really experimental, like the obelisk, actually going beyond the obelisk, the EMF field around it.
Okay.
And some of them are kind of quirky. He's got a crystal one that you can place your crystals on, and supposedly it'll charge your crystals.
Wow, cool. I want to try that one.
There you go. 99 cents.
Okay, I'll buy
it.
I'm
not getting a cut from Bill, by the way.
You know what? I'm curious. What do you think about the various hack boxes out there these days?
You know, I'll say this. We've used the Radio Shack hack.
Okay.
We haven't used it a lot. One time at Manteno, for folks in the Chicagoland area, they're familiar with Manteno, which was an insane asylum in Manteno, Illinois.
Okay.
We're out there one night, and we're activity, so we decided to pull this thing out and, hey, let's try this thing out. And we turned it on and we said, do you want us to leave? And it came back, and it could have been matrixing, but it sure sounded like go away.
Ooh.
And immediately after we asked that question, and it was interesting because there was a young gal that was there with us tonight, and she said, you know, that's the part of the in the movie when the OSAs leave that nobody leaves and they get all hacked a bit.
Right.
So I think the jury's still out on the Frank boxes and the ghost boxes. There's a lot of what I call interesting coincidences that people are getting with these things. The Radio Shack hacks, the Frank's box, the obeluses that you really can't leave to coincidence. I mean, how do you explain getting a direct response over and over and over again to a question? You know, it kind of rolls out coincidence.
Well, I remember Karen, one of our show hosts here on Paranormal Underground Radio, who's not here tonight, but she had some impressive dealings with some of these, and I think one of them was called the Speak Jet.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any experience with that one?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Okay.
There's actually with the American Association of EVP, they're actually using the EVP maker that's out there right now. That kind of works like the Speak Jet, where it kind of throws the different consonant sounds and different sounds out there in a random fashion. And they're doing an experiment right now to find out. So you're trying to find out a certain object in a certain room across the country. And to use this EVP maker, if you will, to try to get to that. So so far, I don't think anybody's had any specific luck of saying what this object is, but
interesting.
A lot of experimentation out there.
Well, I find them fascinating, actually, because, you know, when you get boxes saying names of people in the room, I mean, more than one person, it feel like maybe there's more than just coincidence going on there.
Sure.
Things like that, but...
Sure. We were actually in a theater using the obelisk, and what's neat about the FX is, you know, you can validate the words that it said. You can download the words later and say, you know, gee, I heard the word heat. Mm-hmm. And it said heat.
Wow.
But we have to be in a theater that was previously a hotel, and there was a fire that was there, and there were two people that were killed.
Okay.
And we happened to walk into the room when somebody else was doing an EVP session. They said, oh, gee, last time we were here, we heard fire, get out. Well, sure enough, we fired up the obelisk, and the first words that it said to us was heat, run, stairs, help, etc., words like that, about six words in a row.
Okay.
So, coincidence? I don't know.
I'm thinking not. Well, I just wanted to thank you for joining us, Michael, and we look forward to having you on again soon to talk about some more cool gadgets. Why don't you... go ahead.
I was going to say, they can check out... what I essentially do is I do reviews about every 3-4 weeks on either a new piece of gear or an existing piece of gear out there, and they can catch it at ghostgadgetguy.com, or they can check out my team at cpiteam.net, which is Confidential Paranormal Investigators in Northwest Illinois.
That's great. Everybody check out Michael's sites, and we'll have Michael back on soon. Michael, I was wondering if you could stay around for about 5 more minutes to answer a few questions. Chad, it's just going to be the three of us since we lost everyone else.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we're gonna do a couple of the lightning round questions, but we're gonna save one for next week because I know Karen wants to be in on that one. So I'll ask. Why don't I just ask, and the two of you, we can start with Michael and then go to Chad, and just in one or two sentences, just give me your impressions on these questions. Let's see, the Paranormal Activity 2 trailer was yanked from several theaters in Texas recently because Twilight fans at the movie Eclipse complained that the trailer was just too scary. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, I saw it on Tuesday with the wife, and the trailer was not there, so I was not scared with that, but I have a complaint. There are no fat vampires and no fat werewolves in this movie. I think that's discrimination, so I'm going to file a lawsuit against that.
Chad?
Well, look at where they're coming from and what kind of movie they are watching. So, not really horror in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't blame them for getting scared.
I hear you. All right, let's go to the next question. This one is just out of the Bizarre Files. A 2-year-old psychic octopus that was born in England but raised in Germany correctly predicted a German win when the two met in June in the World Cup. The octopus also predicted by removing mussels from containers marked with opposing World Cup teams, Germany's victory over Ghana and Australia, as well as a German loss to Serbia. Please comment on psychic octopi. Michael.
I did hear, didn't it predict Spain as well? Over Germany? I think it did.
Did it? Okay, yeah. That could be.
I not only want to ask this octopi what the next winning numbers are in the Powerball, but I would like to be the first to announce that I am offering a ghost detecting octopi, and I will
nice.
It'll be on my new website, ghostdetectingoctopi.com. So
wow.
I haven't priced together on it.
You've cornered that market. Chad, what do you think about psychic octopi?
I don't know what to think about it. I mean, it sounds like it's just more than just a coincidence. So.
Yep. Okay. Interesting. And let's, I've got another one here. It says, a recent poll by Pew Research showed that 40% of Americans believe Jesus will return by 2050. That's really good news because 82% of people in the same poll said they felt a woman would be elected president by 2060. So I'd like to know if you think Jesus will return before a woman is elected president. Michael.
All right. I got a good one for this one. Yes, I do believe that Jesus will return before a woman is elected president. Now, before I get the hate mail and stuff, you have to just... This is one of those chicken, you know, which came first, chicken or the egg questions.
Right.
Here's my prediction. Sarah Palin will be the first woman president, and the only way that she's going to get elected is to have Jesus Christ as her running mate.
Okay, that was great. Thanks, Michael. Chad, what do you think?
I have no comment on that.
All right. No comment from Chad. And Our final question is, actually, we covering this news item in the magazine in July. Dr. Barry Colvin of the Journal for Psychical Research has recently analyzed poltergeist knocks versus regular knocks and found that there have been some acoustical differences, significant differences. And after 5 years of research, Dr. Colvin concluded that the paranormal knocks or poltergeist knocks and bangs have very different waveforms than knocks from natural sources like people, objects, animals. What do you think about this? Are these significant findings? Do you think this study leads to any credence that there are differences between poltergeist knocks and regular knocks? Michael?
I saw this one earlier in the week, and as much as I'd like to come up with a funny response for this, I'm really interested in this one. I've got a sound background, so it's interesting because I've always been curious about with EVPs and different sounds that we hear during an investigation, looking at the different frequency response. I can't explain, you know, put knocking aside, I can't explain how we get EVPs that are clear Class A EVPs, and we had a bunch of folks sitting around, and not only did we not hear the EVP, but, you know, we didn't, we didn't catch it on several recorders. We only got it on one recorder. The same with the knocks here. I think that is interesting. What I did like in the article was that it showed that it sounded like, whereas a knock, if a normal person knocked, you hear the attack at the beginning of the sound, and then it kind of decays from there. Whereas the knocks from the poltergeist, actually the vibration started slowly, increased to the attack in the sound, and then decreased and decayed. So it's pretty neat stuff.
Interesting. Chad, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's interesting, and I think it needs further investigation to, you know, test it out.
All right. Well, I want to thank Michael Kravchuk, Ghost Gadget Guy, for joining us today, and I know he's going to come back soon. Thank you, Michael.
No problem. Thank you.
And again, I want to thank Chad for stepping in here today, and hopefully next week we'll be back to normal with our regular hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. And next week, please come back Thursday for our conversation with Lloyd Auerbach, renowned parapsychologist, And the week after, we're going to be talking to Stan Romanek, alien abductee. So thanks, everyone. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ztalkradio.com.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network.